Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blogging Theology. Today, I'm delighted to talk to Dr. Zohair Abdulrahman. You are most welcome, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, and you are most welcome as well. I always wanted to say that.
that's very nice to hear. You're the first person ever to say that. So now, just to clarify, you're on the opposite side of the planet, really. I'm in London in the UK, obviously in Europe, and you are in, where are you?
I'm in the land they call Down Under in Brisbane, Australia. Alhamdulillah.
Great. A former British colony, I'll point. No, I mustn't say that. Very unkind.
Send your prisoners. You used to send your prisoners down here.
Exactly. Not anymore, though. We stopped that a while ago, thank goodness. Now, I want to introduce Zohair and what we're going to be talking about today. Zohair is a senior researcher, fellow for the Yakin Institute in the Department of Systematic Theology. As we know, he resides in Brisbane, Australia, where he works as a medical doctor and serves as a volunteer imam at a number of mosques, delivering khutbahs and lectures for adults and the youth. He's a student of knowledge and has spent the last 18 years studying the Islamic sciences under several teachers, both locally and abroad, in a part-time capacity. He's received ijazah in the fields of Aqidah and Hadith. And he's published on Islamic theology, Islamic spirituality, Islamic theology, so psychology, theology, and psychology, I think I got that right, and mental health. Now, in a recently published paper about Ibn Qayyim's reflections on how to overcome addiction, Dr. Zohair wrote the following. This is the opening paragraph, really, and I think it's a great bit of prose and introduces us to the essay or the paper, which I'll link to in the description below. So he wrote the following: a flurry of highly curated images, sounds, videos, and lights and colors designed to captivate our minds, flood our consciousness on a daily basis. Mass production of food products engineered in labs to tease our taste buds, fill our pantries, and satiate our appetites. Intoxicants have never been more widely available, with the decriminalization of recreational drugs in a number of countries and the pharmacological use of illicit drugs for pain relief and mental illness. The opioid epidemic has surged onto public concern as middle, upper class populations, developed nations are in the grips of a drug crisis. The spirit of modernity seems to allure humanity to an endless pursuit of instant gratification by using the most advanced technologies. Even the color of the notification icons on our phones are designed to keep us coming back for more, end quote. And I had to think about that one. Yeah, you're right. The notification icons are there to obviously to trigger our attention and bring us back. So that's just the opening paragraph. So would you like to tell us more about your paper, which is about, how to overcome addiction through faith? So I think it's a pioneering work, isn't it, on overcoming addiction?
Jazakallah khair again. Thank you so much for having me on Blogging Theology, longtime viewer as well, and been able to benefit from a lot of your content. And thank you for that generous introduction as well. This paper that we put together was something that we felt was very important because there are two angles here. On the one angle, you do have a lot of people in the Muslim community that are actually dealing with addiction, various different categories, types, and conditions. Mm. And they tend to suffer in silence, especially those who are religiously committed as well, because there's obviously a lot of shame that's associated with a lot of these sorts of addictions. And you'd be surprised that people who attend the mosques regularly may have struggles with alcohol, substances, and a big one, especially for young people, of course, pornography. And so this particular piece is kind of the beginning of what we hope to be an ongoing conversation and an ongoing effort into investigating the best ways that we can service the Muslim community to help them through therapeutic approaches to be able to overcome a lot of these addictions. Mm. And the best way to start, at least, you know, as traditional Muslims, is always to look back into the tradition and always to find the treasure that's there, and then to essentially bring those gems forward, and you have something to latch onto that's actually rooted in the tradition. And so we didn't need to look too far except to find Ibn al-Qayyim, rahimahullah. He passed away 751 after the Hijrah, so that's in the 1300s in the Gregorian calendar. And he's someone that's known for his very unique take on a lot of different spiritual issues, but also kind of psychological issues as well. He, sometimes they call him the heart doctor. Sometimes people dub him the most often quoted sheikh on social media. Because if you look on the WhatsApp forwards and all the Instagram posts where they put those little quotations and the flowery different backgrounds, oftentimes you'll find that those quotes are from Ibn Qayyim.
Yeah, that's true.
He has a way of writing, and he has a way of articulating Islamic spiritual ideas that really captivates readers, even with its translation as well. And there's a lot of depth into his work, and it's not just quotes and aphorisms. He really offers, he really thinks very deeply about the human condition, and obviously very grounded in the Islamic revelation, in the revelatory sciences, in the ulum al-shar'iyya. And that makes for a very, very interesting read when you look into the books of Ibn al-Qayyim. So one of the books, and the ones that we're going to focus on here, I mean, there's so many to explore the Ibn al-Qayyim in many different angles and avenues. But for our purposes, when we talk about the book Rawdatul Muhibbin, and this article is based on this book, particularly the last chapter of this book. And in fact, the article itself is a translation and a brief commentary. And that's where we started when it came to addiction. And I was surprised many years ago when I had first started reading Rawdatul Muhibbin, I was surprised that there was such a explicit focus on the concept of addiction. I hadn't read that in, you know, other spiritual works in books of Tazkiyatun Nafs or spirituality. It's not something that you come across kind of classically where people talk about addiction. People will talk about diseases of the heart, like Amrad al-Qulub. People will talk about, you know, desires and lust and shahwa and passions and these sorts of things.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You know, the haram and whatnot, but to actually describe addiction in a very psychological way, as if this is some sort of disorder, or as if this is sort of
quite a modern way. It's quite a modern way of framing, isn't it? Addiction, psychology of addiction is quite a modern. And you're saying in a way that. Ibn Qayyim is a pioneer of, 700 years ago, way before the West ever developed this concept in psychology, that the Muslims were really pioneers in developing this in a very sophisticated and still enduringly helpful way, perhaps.
Yeah, you're completely right there, Paul. The idea is that Ibn Qayyim, and I think the reason that he was able to speak with such clarity on this is because of the depth in which you find in his sources, that in his works, that he really reflects on the human condition and on the matters on the inside. Right. And while a person would just gloss over, I think he really thinks deeply about the condition and himself and other people as well. And you find, by the way, sorry, just a tangent, you'll find people open up to him and send letters to him, opening up about their deepest, you know, problems. There's a book called da'wa dawa, the cure and its the diseases and its cure, or it's also known as jawab al-kafi, which is like the sufficient response. And essentially someone opens up to Ibn al-Qayyim and sends this letter about desires that he's having inside. And it seems to be the case, although it's not explicitly mentioned by the questioner, but it seems like these are same-sex urges that the person is describing. And this person then asks Ibn al-Qayyim, and Ibn al-Qayyim says, when he receives this letter, let me just write a book.
without mentioning your name, of course.
No, we'll just make it anonymous. As you do, you get a question from someone, you say, okay, let me just write the book and I'll give it back to you. Wow. And so, as I said, this shows the depth kind of his reflection. And his level of mastery of the Islamic sciences is something that's known to anyone who studied the Islamic works. You understand Ibn al-Qayyim's caliber. But you're right what you said. And I think that both of those things come together, because the revelation itself is also something that's very rich as well. And I think lends itself to a person who's deep and thickly to guide their thought process towards better understandings of various issues that are plaguing, humanity. And it applies now as it does in the past as well. But as you mentioned, actually, if you look into the history of addiction medicine or the history of addiction, you open up any textbook in the academy, and they will credit essentially 17th century Calvinists. So you guys, basically.
When I read your article, I thought, well, hang on, what has 17th century Calvinists got to do with this subject? Because they're like into dogmatic theology and predestination and some very sort of modern sounding like evangelical kind of polemics. And yet these guys have been referenced in the field of the psychology of addiction. So how come they're involved in this story?
Well, it's really because in some of their works, essentially, they talk about the psychological effects of addiction, which within the Western tradition, there wasn't really anyone or any work that they could point to that actually described this. And if you look at it, I mean, the concept of addiction and being addicted to a substance, aside from the law aspect of things, if it's an illegal substance, it really was always in the domain of a bit more of religion in the sense of, being spiritually uplift a person. So in any case, they described it as a loss of control, Yeah. So it was something that was a psychological issue that required therapy, essentially. But as we're well aware, and even that was not something to the depth, it wasn't close to the depth in which Ibn al-Qayyim actually describes it. And so that was 17th century, that's in the 1600s. So we're talking over 300 years before that. Mm-hmm. Ibn al-Qayyim, in his last chapter of Rawdatul Muhibbin. So Rawdatul Muhibbin itself, the book it's called The Garden of the Lovers. Rawdatul Muhibbin is the Garden of the Lovers. And it's his book it's basically the theology of love, of mahabba, of love. A very detailed analysis of the concept of love in Islam in various different relations. So obviously love for Allah, love for, your marital kind of partner or intimate love, you can say, love for the sake of Allah. Desires was a huge part of this book as well, dealing with those desires and how all these different internal mechanisms within us and the various different motivations that we have, how they all come together essentially. And it's his theology and concept of love in Rawdatul Muhibbin. The last chapter, he essentially starts to describe the mudmin or the addict. And even in modern day Arabic, this is the term that's used to describe addiction. I'll just read to you a quote from the translation that we have that will give you an idea of how he described addiction in a very, very interesting way. And you can really derive, so the way we look at addiction now, we look at it in terms of tolerance, in terms of dependence, and in terms of addiction. These are the three levels, at least in medicine, when we categorize a person's dependency or an addiction to a substance. The first level is tolerance, where you take a substance and or behavior, and essentially you become tolerant to the pleasurable effects of it, meaning it takes more of that substance to generate the same amount of dopaminergic feeling or pleasure because you become tolerant to it. And this is something that people understand regarding to drinking and stuff like this. People say you're a heavyweight, you're a lightweight or whatever. It has to do with the exposure of alcohol that you've had beforehand and how tolerant you've become to it. So that's the first level, you can say. The second level is dependence, where it's not just that you become tolerant to it, but now in order for you to be in equilibrium, you actually need that substance. Because without it, it's become so much a part of your routine that your mind and your body essentially has incorporated it into its equilibrium state. So that's called dependence, where you need it physiologically. There's a physical dependence. And if you don't take it, then you get withdrawal. So that's dependence. Then the third stage is addiction, they call it, which is psychologically being attached to this substance, where you feel like your self-worth, your esteem, your power, your sense of competency can only happen, you know, if you're able to take that substance or do those sorts of behaviors, whatever it may be. And then that's where you get things like risky behavior. People will sacrifice their relationships. They'll sacrifice their career for that substance. And that's where a person has become psychologically, enslaved, you can say, to that substance. And that's the idea of addiction. So there's these three levels. That's the way that we stratified and categorized it in medicine. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at Ibn al-Qayyim's description here, it's just a paragraph. I'll just read out if that's okay.
Yeah.
He says, the translation of which, the intelligent person needs to know that the ones who are addicted, the mudmin, to their desires.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Are transformed into a state where they no longer achieve pleasure through them. And at the same time, they are not able to abstain from them. They reach a state where indulging in their desires become necessary for their living. So if you look at it here, he's actually describing what we would call today as tolerance and then dependence. Mm. He's saying that they no longer achieve pleasure through them at the same time that they are not able to abstain from them. And then he says later on, this is the reason why you find that the alcohol addict or the sex addict does not experience even a tenth of the pleasure that a person normally experiences when engaging in those behaviors in moderation. So you see, he's describing this concept of tolerance, and before that, he's describing the concept of dependence. And as an aside here as well, as you notice, he talks about the sex addict, which is also revolutionary for its time. Even it's literally up into the last few decades that people started to recognize that it's possible to be addicted to a behavior. That's literally like within this generation, that it's that there's a concept of a behavior addiction. And here Ibn al-Qayyim is actually mentioning this explicitly in regards to a behavior addiction.
It's called, 700 years ago, I think, as you said, in the 13th century in the Western China. Yeah.
In Damascus.
Damascus.
Yes. And so 17th century, sorry, 13th, 14th century Damascus in the 1300s. His most famous teacher is, of course, Ibn Taymiyyah. So Ibn Qayyim is his most famous student and disciple. And many of Ibn Taymiyyah's ideas actually are distilled and articulated through Ibn Qayyim's works as well. It's actually hard pressed to find a unique idea from Ibn Qayyim. There may be a few things here and there, a handful that you can say is unique to Ibn Qayyim. Most of the things that he describes, you'll find them in the works of Ibn Taymiyyah. You'll find a passage in his Majmu' al-Fatawa somewhere, and you'll say, hey, wait a second, that's coming from this. And he'll often quote Ibn Taymiyyah and quote Shaykh al-Islam in many of his different kind of writings in regards to theology, spirituality as well. Because in Damascus at the time, there was a bit of a revolution within the field of tazkiyat an-nafs, or within the field of tasawwuf, or whatever you want to call it. Mm. And you found that this group of Hanbalis who were there in Damascus, they started to actually, they saw it really as being reformers of the principles of purification of the soul. And so Ibn Qayyim's main work, most famous work, his magnus opum is the Madarij al-Salikin, without a doubt, which is the Stations of the Wayfarers. And this is actually a commentary of Abu Ansar al-Harawi's in the 5th century, basically a spiritual master. And he wrote 100 stations, and Ibn al-Qayyim expanded and made a commentary on this. And you find that he discusses from a theological lens a lot of the doctrines that came from them, like fana, this idea of it being extinguished within God, and like removing the self and achieving union or jama' with God, and these sorts of ideas that became very popular. You'll find Ibn al-Qayyim will come and he will reinterpret the words and say, yes, fana is here, not meaning that you yourself don't exist, but in your heart is removed of everything that exists except Allah. Like your will, out of all the wills and motivations, there's only one will, and that's la ilaha illallah, and that's for the sake of Allah. So he will often reinterpret very generously from the previous authors and make prayers for them. And he would really kind of work to kind of see himself as a reform of this discipline back to the kind of early ways in which the early Muslims had their theological understanding and their spiritual practices as well. In any case, that and a lot of that obviously comes from Ibn Taymiyyah as well.
Yes.
I'm sorry for this tangent, but anyways, back to you.
That's a very, I mean, I could say so much about what you just said there. It's extremely interesting. So thank you for saying that so concisely, actually, as well.
Yeah. So, with regards to, so as you can see with this passage, you can see that he's describing the terms that we are now kind of using in regards to addiction, and they're all there in his passage, and he's saying it very poetically. And then as for the third one, which is addiction, he says, this throws a person into destruction as he tries to seek what his addiction demands. And that's literally how they describe the psychological aspect where a person becomes enslaved to this concept, and they start to sacrifice the various relationships and their standing in life.
Yeah.
And if the stain of desire were to be removed, he would definitely know that he is made sad from where he thought happiness would come. He is grieved from where he thought joy would come. And he is in pain from where he thought there would be pleasure. So he is like a bird that tries to capture a seed that is in a trap. It is not able to obtain the seed, and it is not able to leave the trap.
Yes. Very vivid, and so many of these concepts are very much, I think they're in the 12-step literature. You know, we see that in the Alcoholic Anonymous program, and other programs based on that original structure, and these concepts are very much alive and hugely influential throughout, affecting millions of people's lives, recovering from alcohol addiction and other drug addiction and so on.
You're so correct. And by the way, as an aside, I wanted to call the article Captured Birds because of this imagery that Ibn al-Qayyim spoke about. But in any case, I'm happy with the title that we settled on as well. But what you were saying about the 12 steps is a very interesting point that you bring up. And this is a point that we really push forward in the article as well, which is that whenever it comes to issues of addiction or mental health, people automatically run to the quote unquote empirical sciences.
Yeah.
And they have this idea that is where you will find the true therapy for these issues. Just like in organic pathology or biological pathology, the sciences are well equipped and have demonstrated to be so effective when it comes to treating bodily illnesses. And so they apply the same thing to the mind with mental health. Yeah. And they also will reduce many different struggles that people go through to the mind, because the mind is in a bit of a quasi space. It's not fully biological, but it's not spiritual as well. So there's something tethering it to something in matter that they can then engage in study and analysis and empirical research and those sorts of things. But this is one of the issues that you've described, actually, about when it comes to the approach of addiction. There is really nothing that is more efficacious than bringing in meaning into a person's life who is struggling with addiction. And meaning is a spiritual concept itself. Mm-hmm. And the 12 steps is a Christian-based, faith-based program that people of all faiths really go through. The first step of it is to accept a transcendent, a God. In its first actual iteration, it says God, but now obviously they had to secularize it and say the
higher power or something. Do they call
it the higher power, transcendent, and these sorts of things?
Yeah.
And if you look at it, you know, it's something that is very clearly a spiritual pursuit that's being advocated. And through that spiritual pursuit, a person actually is recovering from their addiction. And this is, you know, and people in the field recognize that this is one of the most effective means of dealing with addiction, and people will recommend it as well to their patients. And they will say, oh yeah, it's about the community. It's because of the belonging. It's because of all these sorts of things they have.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To, of course, take the aspect of that deeply spiritual component towards God out, and they'll just say, oh yeah, it's all the after effects of it.
Yeah. So in other words, they as you use that word reduce there, which appears in the article. So a lot of these people reduce the symptoms and the solutions to a much more kind of materialist perspective, rather than acknowledging the spiritual/religious dimension to the solution to addiction, which is what Ibn Khamin obviously focuses very much on.
Exactly. And when we talk about the spiritual aspect of things, really when you look at addiction, whether it's to a behavior or whether it's to a substance, a person can get addicted through many ways. Mm. And there's different levels of the problematicness of an addiction. I mean, I think I don't think it's problematic to say that probably, you know, over 50%, at least, if not 80% of people have some level of addiction to their phones, to their social media accounts, to their WhatsApp. And, you know, there'll be people who you get the screen report afterwards of your phone usage, and people will see the amount of time that they spend on it. And that's why there's a concept of a digital detox, that it actually takes effort, that a person has to divorce themselves from this phone. And so there's this level that's there. And oftentimes, it's as simple as, you know, it's providing you just cheap dopamine kind of hits. You can say dopamine is the pleasure neurotransmitter, to put it very kind of crudely, in our brains. And oftentimes we latch onto those and form habits with those, because our brain basically tells us, gives us a trigger. This is the environment. And in this environment, you have access to your phone or a cigarette or a drink or, you know, your laptop or your phone to look at, you know, sexual images, whatever it may be. And so then the brain anticipates that, hey, normally there's a lot of dopamine coming at this particular time. And so then the trigger then triggers the actual behavior. The behavior then produces that reward, the dopamine and whatnot. And then that reward reinforces this cycle, this habit, you can say. So there's this habit model, you can call it, of addiction that can affect many different people. And it can basically overstimulate your neurons to the point that obviously you get tolerance, dependence, and then full-on addiction. There's also, and this is why you find in the more underprivileged and lower socioeconomic status populations, they are very vulnerable to being addicted to substances, because there's this idea of being unable to bear the suffering and the difficulty and the pain of life, and then being able to experience a short-term relief and escape. And that itself becomes obviously a cycle of addiction. Yeah. And so this is a crisis of meaning at its root. And it's very interesting, because when you look at, we talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the founders, David Schoen, he wrote this book. It's a very theologically blasphemous title, The War of the Gods of Addiction. And but in this book, he essentially makes the case that addiction is not just some physiological or biological imbalance, that there's something much deeper at play here. And he describes the work with his clients, and he's had so much experience with people who are experiencing addiction. And it's very interesting when you look at the reflections that he has about why people engage in, you know, why people are addicted to things. And firstly, you'll find that, and it's actually in the article as well, we quote Carl Jung, who essentially he says that there is a principle, there's a demonic, you can say, or evil principle in the world that is responsible for people who are affected by this addiction. There's some powerful force that is compelling a person to have to kind of feel the need to continue to pursue whatever it is that they're craving. There's a quote as well, it's not in the article, but it's in that book by David Schoen. And he says that, I believe that people are drawn to it because of its allure of incredible power and energy, of unimaginable freedom, of the ultimate fulfillment of a desire for status, mastery, prestige, and the promise of superhuman potency. Now, I found this passage very interesting, because when you look at the way in the Quran, Allah quotes the devil, the shaitan, in his promise to Adam, when he tempted him in the tree, it was shajaratul khuld, or amulkun la yabla, the tree of eternal life, a kingdom and a dominion that will never go. It was this promise and allure of this superhuman potency, of this prestige, of this power. There's a real, like, satanic element here that can be really palpated through the addict's experience. That's really fascinating to me. When you look at, you know,
isn't it the case that Western medicine, Western approaches to psychology of addiction, you mentioned they're a little bit reductionist. Don't they dismiss these hidden or unseen dimensions, which are very powerful and real, as you say in your article, it's in the Quran, affecting individual, the demonic influence, the Quran says that Shaitan is an enemy of mankind and seeks to destroy mankind. Isn't that whole dimension missing? And isn't there a huge deficit that Islam can, in a sense, bring to the discussion in a way, helpfully, to give a more holistic and rounded understanding of the experience of addiction in all its seen and unseen dimensions?
That's exactly the point. That there's this whole, as you said, when you look at the, not just that it exists, but the level of influence and the level of impact that these worlds actually have on our minds and our psyche and our hearts is completely underestimated, if not completely neglected, especially in the kind of Western secular mind. And that bleeds into the way Muslims even think and view about their own mental health, and the way that Muslims even view about their own mental equilibrium or struggling with their own addiction, where they will then think, and they're trained to think in this way of, I have a problem. Religion is not very a useful place for problems. Religion is just a place I go on Fridays, and it's just a place that I have my community. And then when it comes to real problems I'm dealing with in my life, that's found with the doctor, that's found in the hospital. Now, I want to make a very clear point as well, because sometimes we have people in our community who are very kind of skeptical towards the healthcare community and skeptical towards, you know, those sorts of things. Definitely, these are important aspects of recovery in many different angles. And even from an Islamic point of view, Ibn al-Qayyim recognizes this. In Zadul Ma'ad, in a different book of his, this is his book actually, Zadul Ma'ad is his book on Sirah. Not a, like a necessarily a chronological or historical work, but it's his reflection of Sirah. Sirah is the biography of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So in this, he basically reflects on various events in the life of the Prophet Muhammad, and he brings about different gems and different fawaid or different benefits. And so one of the passages actually in Zadul Ma'ad, he categorizes diseases of the heart into two. And he says that there are diseases of the heart that are essentially actually physically rooted. And so he says issues of mood, mizaj, or issues of anger, whatever it may be. He says this is sometimes biologically or materially or bodily, it's like having to do with the body. And then he says that the intervention may be required from something from nature, essentially, maybe medication of some sort. And this is something that was, of course, recognized going back to Hippocrates and whatnot, that the in the ancient Greeks and the way that they practiced medicine, the psychoactive effects or the psychotherapeutic effects of various different natural substances. This is something that was known as well. And so Ibn al-Qayyim obviously recognized this as not something that was, you know, a threat to the Islamic worldview at all, but rather something that was in harmony with it. So certainly there's this element. So I don't want to make it seem like I'm declaring that it's, you know, Western medicine, or I don't even like to call it Western medicine per se, because I think the empirical sciences are something that exists in all over the world. It's a global system of medicine. But as I'm saying, and as you mentioned, there is this very important aspect that's completely neglected. Ibn Taymiyyah actually says that if you were to lift the veil, you would find that the vast majority of mankind are possessed by, you know, shayateen at different levels. And when he talks about possession, he's not talking about like, you know, exorcist movie possession style or a lot of the different videos that you see on YouTube of people completely in this form. He's talking about the level of influence that the shaitan has on the person's thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, desires, feelings, animosity, all these things. Like they, you say, if you were to look and remove the veil, you'd see that the shaitan has the puppet strings completely in the person's heart. So 100%, this is a very important thing for us to focus on. And in fact, we talked about shaitan and the link to addiction when we talked about the addict's experience and how this very much matches, you know, verbatim what the shaitan had tempted our father Adam with. You'll find as well in the Quran, when Allah talks about alcohol and gambling, interestingly, he puts these two together. Allah combines alcohol and gambling. Innamal khamru wal maysiru wal ansabu. And then there's some divining arrows and whatnot, superstitions, you can say. But alcohol and gambling are brought together. And this is interesting because one is a substance and one is a behavior. And we spoke about how this concept of behavioral addiction is a very new, and it's hotly debated, by the way, to this day. In the scientific literature, some people don't recognize that it's possible to be addicted to a behavior, and they think this is a totally different category.
Sure, I looked into that actually. That some people did not deny this addiction at all, despite the very addictive nature of it. It's quite strange, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and so, but if you look at like the ICD or the International Classification of Disease in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, which are basically the books that psychiatrists go to when it comes to diagnosing mental conditions. DSM is used mostly in clinical practice. The ICD is used a lot in academic practices. So when you do trials, you often will go to the ICD criteria for diseases and diagnosis, generally speaking. But in the ICD, you do find behavioral addictions that are a part of it. And it's a growing recognized aspect. But it's interesting that the Quran brings the substance and the behavioral addict. And then Allah tells us very clearly in the Quran that these are min amali shaytan. This is from the handiwork of the shaytan, that the alcohol and the gambling and all of the evil that comes around it, from addiction to this enslavement to the substance and to the behavior, this is from the handiwork of the shaytan. And so, I mean, we can't get any more explicit than this, that there is a satanic priority when it comes to addiction. And these substances, the shaitan will certainly make very alluring to a person to try and to continue to reinforce that habit and behavior until that person's completely addicted to that substance or that behavior. So, you know, this is a very important aspect. And And in, as well, we talked about alcohol and gambling. When it comes to like those of a sexual nature, we also know that Allah says in the Quran, الشيطان يعيدكم الفقر ويأمركم بالفحشاء. That shaitan promises you poverty and commands you to fahsha. And fahsha is any general evil. But of course, there is this connotation of that sexual aspect when it comes to fahsha. And so it's very interesting the language that's used here, right? He promises poverty, and that's the source of our anxiety over wealth or anxiety over what's going to happen in my life, because there's this promise of poverty. The shaitan is putting this vision or this this worry of how your world is going to collapse and your life is going to be upside down. And that's obviously, of course, and we can understand the source of that from the shaitan, which is an issue that a lot of people deal with, by the way, with anxiety. And again, we can look this back to the shaitan is mentioned very particularly when it comes to this promise. وَيَأْمُرْكُمْ بِالْفَحْشَىٰ. Now, which one is stronger, the promise or command? Command is stronger. And so the strongest word is used when it comes to this idea of fahsha and commanding a person to fahsha. And so this is the satanic priority here, when it comes to addiction to behaviors and to substances. And it's certainly something that we need to understand requires spiritual work. That's not something you can take, pop a pill, and then the shaitan will go away per se. But rather, it requires spiritual fortitude, mental fortitude, intellectual fortitude, to be able to resist and to be able to engage in the spiritual work necessary to ensure that these satanic impulses are being minimized inside of the hearts. And so you're having to deal with your nafs, which is one thing, your ego and your cravings, your desire, but you're able to divorce that from the shaitan that preys on that nafs and manipulates that nafs to basically get whatever it wants.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, out of interest, if people wanted to seek help for themselves in terms of their addictive behavior, their powerlessness over their behavior online, for example, how would they go about that? Would you have any resources or places they might go to?
At the moment, there isn't too many places. There is a website I'm not affiliated with, so it's just a recommendation of mine that I've seen. They do great work, mashallah, and they've been in this space for quite a while. And when it comes to, and this is when it mostly comes to those of a sexual kind of inclination, and that is something called Purify Your Gaze, purifyyourgaze.com. And it's actually an online community. I've done a few workshops with them and a few like open hours with some of the people that are there in that community. There are some others as well that I've seen that are working in this space, but nothing that I can see that's an online program. And it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's just not something that I'm aware of.
So purifyyourgaze.com, obviously that's linked to sexual addiction and relationships.
Yeah, when it comes to alcohol or other substances, I'm not aware of a Muslim-specific area. But to be honest, when it comes to Muslim-specific, when it comes to those of a more of a sexual nature, it's really required, because obviously there's no resources from the West for this, because they encourage this type of stuff. And even at a very young age, sadly, and you see it in all sorts of places that you would least expect to see these sorts of images. When it comes to alcohol and gambling, oftentimes there are lots of resources that do exist within the country's or city's own infrastructure anyways. Yeah. But I do think that there is an important need to actually have Muslim spaces, faith-based approaches. In Brisbane in particular, there is a brother with a group that is looking to try and actually build a recovery center, a rehab center, that's like a Muslim-specific place that a person's able to go. It's within the system of healthcare as well. You're able to refer them on, and it's faith-based and, you know, culturally appropriate care. Hamza Rabi, some of his people that are there that are working on this in Brisbane. I don't think that they have a website as such, but I know they're working towards this. If you go on YouTube, you type in Academy Alive, you'll find their podcast. And he does a podcast on this, and he talks about this issue of addiction. And he actually has a lot of different guests that come and they talk about different aspects of addiction in the Muslim community. He himself is a convert. European Aussie convert and has a very interesting story himself and, you know, what he's been through, and became Muslim in jail, actually, and then came out and starting to help people not make the same mistakes he did. So you can check those out. And I think there's some stuff that he's doing as well on Academy Alive. Mm.
No, thank you for that. Just one final question, really. You mentioned the Western approach is quite often reductionist and doesn't acknowledge. Did you get a sense that there is a paradigm shift emerging, or are you still very much in the West, in the thicker of this kind of dunya-centered, denying the unseen reality in treatment, in diagnosis, in just theoretical understanding of the issues? Do you get a sense that we're moving into a more comprehensive understanding, or are we still stuck in this, as I say, dunya-centered, materialist epistemology?
What's interesting about medicine is that it leaps beyond the science in many cases because it has to. What do I mean? What I mean by that is that there's something called evidence-based medicine, which is this idea that let's not be hung up on the theoretical scientific models that have been developed over, you know, many decades. And let's just focus on outcome-based evidence, meaning let's look at the drug, let's look at the outcomes we're interested in, and let's see if it works.
Yeah.
And we will figure out the mechanism later.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, no, that doesn't make sense. That it doesn't. Why would this work based on our current understanding of the physiology and pathophysiology? Right. This is what makes sense. No, well, it seems to work. Let's do it. That's it. We don't have time to waste. We're not going to wait and catch up and say, no, that doesn't make sense. And similarly as well, they encourage, you know, medical professionals to always keep up with the latest evidence and not to just rely on their models that they learned, you know, 20 years ago about the human body and whatnot, because these things are always changing. So oftentimes the medical profession actually pushes through a lot when it comes to changing paradigms of the way we look at different diseases, different body parts and its relation to other organs. And we'll often find, well, why does this work? And we'll say, oh, we don't know, but it works. So let's keep going with it. When it comes to the issue of mental health, I would say that this is also the case, particularly with the question you asked, that there is certainly a growing understanding of the therapeutic value of religion and spirituality. You know, in a way of like, they don't like to admit it, obviously, especially when it comes to anything Abrahamic or revelation-based, they don't like that. So they'll use terms like spirituality.
When you say you don't like that, I mean, this is not just like obvious they don't like. Why don't they like it? I mean, I know people like Sigmund Freud, the father of psychoanalysis, allegedly was very anti-religious. I mean, he was an atheist, and that really informed his worldview and his demythologization or debunking of religion as somehow a very bad thing, really, for a healthy mind. So we have this kind of, right from the beginning of psychoanalysis anyway, this prejudice against religion. Is that the kind of source we're looking at? It's very odd that there should be this tendency against that, I think.
Well, I mean, this is something that permeates modern culture. And, you know, you can source it back to liberalism. You can source it back to the Enlightenment. You can source it back to, from this angle, this is a cultural phenomenon that permeates almost every different sector of society and almost every different field of knowledge. And medicine is no different, and healthcare is no different. It's a distaste and a distrust for traditional religion, for revelation-based religion, for law-based religions, for any kind of hierarchical religious clergy. These are all things that have let Western culture down. That's how they feel really deeply in their subconscious, that this, we've been there, done that, but they incorrectly project their own failures and insecurities with Christianity, and they project that to every other religion that's similar to it. And that's why I say similar to it. And Islam, you know, Muhammad Asad said something very interesting. He said that in his book, Islam at the Crossroads. He said that the thing is with, he said that the West will never give Islam a chance or even recognize its value because it's too similar to Christianity, and it reminds them of their failure when it came to the Christian religion. And it is something that is almost an embarrassment and a humiliation to them, that this is a religion with the same prophets, the same concept of God, like generally speaking, the same, you know, coming from that same root, that same morality. And why is it superior to what we've produced within the West? And so then Muhammad Asad mentioned that that the West would be a lot more enamored and a lot more connected to far Eastern spiritual traditions like Hinduism and Buddhism more than Islam, because there's no one takes that mythology seriously, and it's not meant to be taken seriously. But there's this ability to separate the mythology from the practices and to take benefit from these spiritual practices that work on the soul and be able to disengage from the body, and they feel that sense of whatever it may be, that sense of relief, that sense of, you know, stress relief, or the sense of enlightenment, if they want to call it that. But when it comes to Islam, you can't divorce that. You can't take the theology. You can't say, oh, try prayer, try salah. No, the salah only makes sense with the theology and the aqidah in mind of the person there in conversation with God. That's the only thing. You can't just go, oh, just try prayer, oh, bang out a few rakahs and, you know, go into prostration. And that's why it's whenever you pray in public, people always stop you and say, oh, that's a very interesting yoga position. I've never seen that before.
It sounds like you're speaking from experience. Yeah.
Just a tad. But this is the interesting thing when it comes to, you know, why there is this distaste for religion, in particular Abrahamic religions, and definitely when it comes to something like Islam. So going back to your original question, yes, there is a recognition of the therapeutic value of spirituality. They will use secularizing terms like meaning or, you know, the idea of, they'll use terms like spirituality as well. Mindfulness is something that is really breaking through the medical field at this point, even in general practice, which is the specialty that I'm training in. That's something that is literally, even when you talk about guidelines and they talk about, you know, if someone's coming in and these are the different issues that they're having, that's one of the things that's meant to be said to tick the box for your exams. Did you encourage mindfulness meditation? This is a spiritual practice, obviously transplanted from Buddhist philosophy, and is brought into Western culture because they recognize the need for some sort of tradition, some sort of religious practice, something that's actually working at the spirit or at the level of the soul. So there is this growing recognition. There are studies as well that you will find published about correlations between religious affiliation and lower mental health rates. And they will, again, they will secularize and they will reduce this to the feeling of belonging, the feeling of community. But I would say, when you take a look at this, at the end of the day, when you say belonging is what is bringing the therapeutic value here, what is belonging? Mm-hmm. It's metaphysical, isn't it? That's not a substance. That's not a drug. That's not a pill. That's not an element in the periodic table of elements. That's a metaphysical idea and concept that exists in the mind. That is a metaphysical, spiritual concept that exists within a religious faith community. And we say that is a spiritual element, and it has an ontological reality to it, at least on our physiology. And that's the point here, right? This is not just it exists in our mind. We have now studied, we can see that what exists in our mind does affect our actual biology as well. So there's an ontological rooting in this world of these spiritual concepts. Yeah. You know, there was an interesting study that was done by Andrew Newberg. Andrew Newberg is an interesting researcher. He's a neuroscientist, and he really started this field called neurotheology.
Oh, I've not heard that. Neurotheology. Gosh.
Neurotheology, and wow. It's a small field, and he's published most of the papers within it. And what he does is he puts people through brain scans, functional MRIs, images, and he gets people to come and do different spiritual practices. And he basically measures what happens in the brain. Mm. And what was very interesting is he measured Muslims praying salah. And he even actually separated khushu' and non-khushu'. So someone who's concentrating, and I didn't look into, you know, the ethics of someone praying two rakahs with the intention that they're not going to be concentrating.
How would he know if someone had the intention to concentrate or not? I mean, it's not exactly.
I mean, that's the idea. It's more self-report, obviously. I think it's problematic to start two rakahs and say, all right, I'm not going to concentrate with these two rakahs. But in any case, and then the khushu' one. And he also did one of people doing some dhikr practices as well. And they found very profound, differences in the brain and the different areas in which the blood flowed in the brain based on the prayer. And what was very interesting was that they found that there was this temporal hypofrontality where the blood flow basically from the anterior cingulate gyrus, if I'm not mistaken. Essentially, the activity decreased. And this is in the frontal cortex of the brain, in the frontal, prefrontal cortex of the brain. And the frontal aspect of the brain is the executive planning and the executive decisions and the thinking and the planning aspect of your mind, you can say. Not that the mind is reduced to the brain, but it's associated with activity in the frontal aspect of the brain. Now, what was fascinating was that when the person went to sajda and they prayed, we understand that that is an act of submission to God, an act of surrender to God. And we say we surrender our will to the will to God. We submit our will to the will of God. That's what it means to be a Muslim. Mm. But what's fascinating was that they found that that not just happened on a kind of spiritual level, but it literally showed at a biological level where the part of your brain that's in charge of your will and your planning and your, you know, your sense of identity, that part, literally, the blood decreased from that part and it went away from that area, so that there's that submission that you've relinquished that aspect of your will, your desires, and you've left it to God. So there's a real ontological rooting in these spiritual concepts that do exist. And so this is a big problem for those who are obviously materialists, because what is belonging shouldn't have any effect on our brain, because it's a metaphysical concept. Just you being present with a bunch of people around you is not some physical thing that's happening to you. It's a metaphysical thing. And that's literally impacting your physical body as well. So there is a growing understanding of the importance of meaning, the importance of spirituality, and even the importance of a religious community as well. Although they kind of mentioned that last part underneath their breath as they move on swiftly to the next point.
Yeah, very interesting. So there's some positive news there. The Western understanding of these issues is evolving slowly in the right direction, away from seeing religion perhaps as pathological and to be renounced and cured, you know, in the Sigmund Freudian sense anyway. So we're kind of moving.
Look, when it comes to Freud, as you said, he saw it as a pathological defense mechanism of the uncertainty of the world. And it was this desire to maintain the parental complex, and it's the super ego basically gone too far, and it's an imbalance of the id and the super ego and the ego, and it's just basically run amok, and this is what's produced religion. And Carl Jung, of course, which was kind of a student and colleague of his, vehemently disagreed, which led to a lot of tension between them as well, one of the reasons for their tension at least. And Carl Jung took a vastly different approach within the same school of the psychoanalytics, and he saw great value in religion. Most of the people, I would say, in this field, by the way, don't really academically at least reflect or see Freud's ideas or Jung's ideas as anything worth considering or studying further or analyzing, because it's really non-empirical and it's really something in the realm of philosophy for them. Even Freud himself is talking about metaphysical entities rather than, you know, something that's a bit more empirically rooted. And same thing with Carl Jung. And so these things are generally not very studied when it comes to the field of mental health or psychology, or you'll study it in the academic fields of psychology. I'm talking about more clinical aspects of psychology. It's a footnote. It's something you study at the beginning about, oh yeah, this is Freud, and then you move on to the other things. Mm-hmm. But I will say that although they are recognizing the therapeutic value of these different practices and beliefs, there is still the problem of course, when you turn religion into therapy, that's problematic as well. Yeah. Because religion is not therapy and theology is not therapy. That's a very important distinction to understand. It is therapeutic, but it's not therapy, meaning it is not just to be relegated as, you should become a better Muslim because it will help you for your mood, it will help you for your addiction. Mm-hmm. Certainly, maybe it can be a motivation. But at the end of the day, Islam is meant to be a very core fundamental truth and meant to be that fundamental script in our mind that interprets everything in the world. It's the lens by which we see everything, the lens of La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah. So this is an issue that I still think is part of that grand secular project. Even though they're starting to recognize therapeutic value in religion, it's still put in a box alongside everything else. And when it comes to Islam, it's just like, yeah, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Shintoism, maybe a bit of put a bit of this and a bit of that, throw it into the pot, let's see what comes out of the oven. That's a deeply problematic view of religion that is still secular, even though they are starting to recognize that there is a place for religion.
Wow, that's absolutely fascinating. It's still, yeah, coming from a secular paradigm at the end of the day. And as you say, Islam is completely holistic. It encompasses absolutely everything. And that's its power, its strength, its deep attraction, I think, to many people in the world today who are disillusioned with these piecemeal sort of compartmentalizations or limited solutions to problems. Okay. I think that, but maybe that's enough for now. It's been an hour. So do you have any final words though for us in terms, we mentioned a few resources, the link to purifyyourgaze.com. But in terms of your own work, are you pursuing any lines of research or study we may look forward to?
Definitely. You can check out yaqeeninstitute.org. I've published quite a few papers there in the realm of mental health, theology as well. We have an In Pursuit of Conviction series on the concept of, you know, God's existence and the angels, the Day of Judgment and these sorts of things. So there's a lot of work that's already there on Yaqeen. And there's a few things in the pipeline, inshallah, that will come through on Yaqeen Institute. I guess locally, those who are in Brisbane or are watching this, they know a lot of the stuff that I do locally. So that's something that's not necessarily going to be for the British audience, I guess. But in terms of most of my academic output, usually it's on Yaqeen Institute. And there's another website as well, spiritualperception.org, spiritualperception.org. And that's with Sheikh Dr. Nazir Khan as well, who's written quite a bit as well on Yaqeen as well. And there's a few articles that I've written on there as well. In regards to the psychology of doubt and the signs of God and the ayat. So that's spiritualperception.org.
Okay, I'm just writing that down, perception.org. Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed, Dr. Zohair Abdul Rahman. Absolutely fascinating hearing you talk about these matters. And I do encourage everyone to look up these links in the description below to follow through as well. So thank you very much. And inshallah, we will meet again one day. So thank you.
Inshallah. Jazakumullah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from.
Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.